This episode of the Holly Fueled Nutrition Podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. To save 10% off your first month of therapy, visit the link in the show notes, which is BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/HollyFueled. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Holly Fueled Nutrition Podcast. I am your host, Holly Samuel, and I am a board certified sports dietitian and certified personal trainer and the CEO of Holly Fueled Nutrition. And today we are going to continue with my supplement myth busting series. This has been a series that's been just really, really fun. So if you're new to the show, basically every couple of episodes, every other episode or so, I try to cover a supplement, a product, an ingredient, or just like a popular topic that I get asked about a lot in the kind of field of sports nutrition, and cover it basically focusing on like what the research is that we know up to date currently and what my recommendations are. So we kind of go through what is it? What are the pros and cons? You know, what are the kind of claims behind this particular thing? And, you know, dosing recommendations, like what should we consider? Who shouldn't take it? Those types of questions. So it's been super fun. And today we're going to continue on with this series with discussing artificial dyes. This is a controversial topic. This one has come up a bunch throughout my career as a dietitian thus far. And to be honest, it's one that like I've had opinions about. The research is super nuanced. Of course it is, because it always is for the most part. And I was pretty excited to just like dive into this a little bit more to cover this topic today, because I think a lot of people have like opinions on artificial dyes, but we haven't really dug deep into some of the research to really understand what's going on. So I'm excited to do that with you today. So basically, artificial dyes, you've heard of them, I'm sure, but this is things like food coloring, right? Like this is things to dye your food a color or to keep it a neutral color. I think a lot of people don't know that. Like if you have a clear substance or a white substance, sometimes there can be a mix of artificial dyes in there to create that color in order to kind of mask any unfavorable colors that may have come from the food science process. So as a dietitian, took a bunch of classes on food science, definitely not a food scientist myself, but I did learn a lot about this. So like, for example, if we're trying to create, you know, like a clear liquid, but the ingredients in that liquid make it like a gross brown color, it would be more appetizing for the public to consume if we could figure out how to color it differently. So this is where artificial dyes can come into play. Typically, they are not really giving any nutritional benefit. You know, they might give it basically more of an aesthetic appearance that is pleasing, but there's not typically any nutritional benefit. So this is like a food additive in its definition. It is an additive to food. It's basically to make it prettier to the consumer and maybe more appetizing, but it's not really meant to have a nutritional benefit. The idea is that hopefully it just doesn't have any nutrition detriment or health consequences, which we'll get into. Artificial dyes were created in basically like 1856 officially from coal tar, but now they are mostly made from petroleum and a couple other substances too. And you should know that there are also like natural dyes that can be used to dye food as well that have been around for a long, long time. So this is things like beet juice or beetroot powder, which can turn things like a red, or paprika, which can turn things orange or red, turmeric, which can turn things orange or red. Spirulina is also used as a dye to turn things like blue or green, and so on and so forth. And these natural dyes typically contribute that same like aesthetic that we're going for. And that's why they're added to the food. They sometimes, you know, might have a little bit of nutritional benefit, but typically they're not used in amounts high enough to really gain a ton of nutritional benefit that way. Again, there's a lot of controversy over the safety of artificial dyes, so I do want to get into this. You should know that most artificial dyes, all artificial dyes and natural dyes as well, go through rigorous testing for toxicity, primarily in animals. So this is something where if you are a bit more animal safety, you know, animal rights conscious, you're maybe a vegan or just an advocate for animals, you know, this is something that, you know, animal studies are used in a lot of different ways, but artificial dyes is one of those ways, even if the dye itself does not come from animals. The most popular dyes in the United States, which is where I am located, if you couldn't tell by my accent, are red 40, yellow 5, and yellow 6, although there are several others as well. Typically, they are primary colors, so red, blue, and green, that give slightly different tinges, if you will, to the color that, you know, we're going for. So in terms of one of the arguments that I hear super often as a dietitian is that, well, a lot of artificial dyes are banned outside of the US. So why does the US allow them in their food system? So again, some dyes are banned in the US and approved in places like the European Union and vice versa. So for example, there's about 9 approved artificial dyes in the US right now. 6 of those 9 are approved in the European Union, but the European Union has 7 additional artificial dyes that are not approved in the US. So again, we can't really point fingers at other countries and say, hey, they're doing it perfect, we should be doing it that way. When one, those other countries may be set up infrastructurally very, very different than our own country. And there might be a good reason for that. You know, the United States is a huge piece of land. For example, it's really hard to, you know, do things like local consumerism with farming when there's so many different seasonal places throughout the US. And we can't, you know, easily kind of get from one part of the country to the other, like we could in, say, France or Italy, which are much smaller countries that have a little bit more of a consistent climate. So again, you know, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that, you know, countries do different things differently from each other. And sometimes those things overlap and sometimes they don't. So we can't really point a finger at the EU and say, they have a bunch of, you know, or they've banned a bunch of the dyes that we haven't, so we must be doing it wrong because the US sucks. No, like, we both have our own processes. Some of it, I'm sure, has pros and cons, but it's not quite that simple. So basically, you know, the FDA and the EFSA state that there is not sufficient evidence currently to conclude that artificial food dyes are unsafe. So these tend to have a like GRAS or generally recognized as safe statement by the FDA to use in certain doses in our food system. So basically, part of this rigorous testing is that, you know, they'll kind of find what a safety threshold is in animals or by weight in studies. And then typically the GRAS statements and what's actually used in food are about 100 times lower or more than that, just to be extra cautious. So again, it's not kind of like we're just throwing this around casually. Like, there is a lot of science, there is a lot of research, and we are kind of still trying to be extra cautious about it when we add it to food. So all things to keep in mind. In terms of like things that you might find artificial dyes in a bunch, I think this is pretty obvious. A lot of things that are colored, especially if they're colored artificially, but there might be some kind of sneaky things too that you weren't, that weren't on your radar. So candy, drinks, like sports drinks, energy drinks, juices, especially juice cocktails, sodas, baked goods, pickles, can have artificial dyes in them, condiments, smoked salmon, salad dressings, sprinkles, that's probably obvious, ice cream cones, ice cream, frostings, icings, sherbet, meal replacement drinks and bars, you know, protein bars, protein powders for sure can have artificial dyes in them, or things like Carnation instant breakfast type. I actually don't know if that has artificial dyes in it, but those types of like powdered to replace meals ice pops, you know, popsicles, frozen fruit bars, and medications too tend to have artificial dyes like Tums, ibuprofen, Tylenol, etc. So there's artificial dyes in a lot of things in our food system. So that's just something to keep in mind. One thing that I always like to point out is that when it comes to sports nutrition products, this is going to be really like hit or miss depending on the company. So we can get into a couple places that one, people think there's dyes, but there's really not. Two, places that there are artificial dyes, just so you're aware. And kind of three, my take on that. Thank you so much to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode of the Hollyfield Nutrition Podcast. Regardless if you have a clinical mental health issue like depression or anxiety, or if you're just a human who lives in this world who is going through a hard time, therapy can give you tools to approach your life in a different way. And that's why I am so excited to tell you about today's sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp's mission is to make therapy more affordable, more accessible. And this is an important mission because finding a therapist can be really, really hard, especially when you're limited to the options in your area. BetterHelp is a platform that makes finding a therapist easier because it's online, it's remote, and by filling out just a few questions, BetterHelp can match you to a professional therapist in a little as a few days. When I used BetterHelp, it was a few hours. So it is truly a very quick and easy process compared to what I've had clients experience and what I've experienced myself in traditionally trying to find a therapist through the healthcare system. It is really easy to sign up and get matched with a therapist. There is a link in my description, which is BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/HollyFueled, which is HollyFueled. And that link is in the description. Clicking that link helps supports this podcast, and it also gets you 10% off your first month of BetterHelp so you can connect with a therapist and see if it helps you out. Because finding a therapist can be a little bit like dating, if you don't really fit with the first therapist they match you to, which is super common in healthcare and therapy, you can easily switch to a new therapist at no additional cost without stressing about insurance, who's in your network, or anything like that. So if you are struggling, book the appointment, get started, consider online therapy with BetterHelp. Visit the link in the description. And again, if this is something that you think is going to help you or you're nervous about it, taking the plunge is the most important first step. And then BetterHelp is going to let you sort out the rest. Now let's get back to the episode. Besides nutrition, what is one of the most important pillars of recovery? Did you guess it? It's sleep. Your sleep is so important as a part of your training routine and also your recovery routine. We all know that after a poor night's sleep, we don't feel our best the next morning. So let me ask you a question. Are you basically giving yourself the best tools that you need to sleep? Do you have a good pillow? No? Did you buy yours from Walmart 10 years ago like I did? Yes. And do you have shoulder and neck pain like I do? Yes. That is why I'm so excited to introduce our new sponsor for the podcast, which is Lagoon. Now, Lagoon reached out to me right around the time that I had my newborn, Owen, and my neck and shoulders were absolutely destroyed from learning how to breastfeed and just being like hunched over a newborn all the time. And of course, my sleep was also not so great. Who's this, right? When they have a newborn baby. So I was really excited when Lagoon reached out and I took their sleep quiz and I was matched to the Otter pillow. And when I tell you I got this pillow, I slept on it for a night, you know, in broken pieces because let's be honest, I was still feeding a newborn every 2 hours, even through the night. I woke up with no more shoulder or neck pain in one night. It was like absolute magic. So it's definitely the nicest pillow I've ever gotten the privilege to sleep on. And one thing I love about it is they come with like extra filling. So you can adjust your filling level in your pillow. You can make it flatter or fluffier depending on what you need. And the pillows are just a really good size too. And also just really high quality. Much higher quality than the trashy pillows I was buying from like Walmart and Target. So
If you could use an upgrade for your pillow, I highly recommend Lagoon. Go check them out. And I got a discount for you as well. So if you'd like a discount on a good night's sleep and a good pillow to help you do that, check out lagoonsleep.com/Holly. You can use code Holly, which is H-O-L-L-E-Y. It's also in the show notes at checkout for 15% off.
All right. So when it comes to things like sports drinks, there's so many out there. First of all, if you need like a review of sports nutrition drinks and like Gatorade, Powerade, Noon, Scratch, those types of things, I have a whole podcast episode where I reviewed, I think like over 20 of them, back in, I think August of 2023. So scroll back, give that a listen. There's a very similar one around the same time on gels. But I digress. So when it comes to sports nutrition drinks, a lot of people think, oh my God, these things are loaded with dyes. And this isn't true. So basically, if you go to the grocery store or the gas station and you go to buy Gatorade Thirst Quencher, which is like your Gatorade run of the mill that you're going to find on the shelf, you're buying Gatorade Zero or G2 or Powerade or something like that. Pedialyte is another one. Yes, there are going to be artificial dyes in those products. However, if you listen to that episode, you know that those tend to not really be the products that I recommend for endurance athletes. And it's really not because of the dyes. It's more because they just don't really have enough sodium. They don't maybe have enough carbohydrates. They're not the best option. They're not what's offered on courses. What's offered on courses tends to be Gatorade Endurance, which is different. You know, it doesn't have artificial dyes in it. It's flavored, it is colored with beta carotene, which is vitamin A derived from things like carrots. And, you know, Noon, Scratch, Tailwind, a lot of those other sports nutrition products that basically only make sports nutrition products. They don't make other foods as well. They also tend to not have artificial dyes in them. They tend to have pretty basic ingredients that should sit pretty well. That's kind of the whole point of the product. So I wanted to debunk that because I think a lot of people are really afraid of sports drinks because of all of the quote unquote artificial stuff in them. And a lot of the times there's not really artificial stuff in them, but there might be on like the random energy drink that you're choosing that we don't really need, right? So wanted to draw some light on that. Two, gels. And again, whole podcast episode on gels and chews and sports nutrition fuel. But gels is kind of another one. A lot of people think there's artificial dyes in gels. There's usually not. Even like looking at Goo, which is like our OG gel, it's typically colored with like fruit and vegetable juice. So they may use natural dyes, or like Huma gels don't have any dyes in them because they're just pureed fruit. Same thing with like Honey Stinger and Morton's, and you know, they don't have dyes in them. So again, when there's fear mongering because of things like artificial dyes, always check the source and try to understand what's actually on the label that you're reading, because usually there's not. Sports nutrition products are supposed to sit well. They're supposed to be well tolerated. So the companies have kind of done their due diligence on checking on that. So I always like to bring that up. In terms of protein powders, that's a little bit more of the wild, wild west. We know that supplements, protein powders are an example of a supplement, are not regulated by the FDA. So, you know, we don't really know what's in them. Energy drinks, pre-workout supplements, creatine, you know, muscle gainers, fat burners, like those types of supplements, guys, are not regulated by the FDA. So there could be artificial dyes in them. There also could be, but we don't know because it's not on the label, because it's not regulated by the FDA and they don't have to put it on the label. But things like first form protein powders, and like, you know, Ensure meal replacement drinks and certain pre-workouts absolutely have artificial dyes in them. So just, again, being mindful of that. And we're going to get into, you know, if that's a good thing or a bad thing or whatever it is in this episode. So in terms of the research, there has been quite a bit of research on artificial dyes. There's a lot of limitations to the research, which we'll get into. But first, I want to go over some of the findings So the big one that people always love to bring up when I'm talking about this is the associations that have been found between artificial food dyes like Red 40 and hyperactivity or ADHD symptoms in children. This is definitely something that has been found in research. There is, you know, pretty decent documentation that there is an association. Again, correlation does not equal causation in research. So it's just an association of reported food dye consumption with an increase in hyperactivity prevalence in children. But it does also appear that some children are more sensitive than others. There's other factors that could contribute to this, such as genetic components. There definitely seems to be a genetic component with kids. And it really has to be on a case-by-case basis. So if you, you know, have a kid with ADHD or hyperactivity, or you yourself were a kid with that, a dye restriction diet, so just avoiding artificial dyes in your food system best you can, it could potentially benefit some kids with ADHD. That's what this research has found, but it's not a guarantee because it's not a guarantee that that's the sole cause of the ADHD. Okay. So one of the big limits to these types of studies is that one, it would be super unethical and never approved by the IRB, the International Research Board, to even perform a study on children that could potentially harm them. They're really, really strict about what you're allowed to even do research on, especially when it comes to kids, pregnant people, like, you know, those types of populations that are more vulnerable. So we can't really do something like, okay, let's take a bunch of kids and let's give them a bunch of dye since, you know, when they're babies and to toddlers and adult and, you know, childhood. And let's see if they develop ADHD. And like, we're going to control the rest of their diet. So it's exactly the same forever. And then we're going to take another group of kids where, you know, we just let them have whatever and let make them avoid dyes and see what the ADHD rate is. Like, we can't really do a double blind and then like, let's have them do a washout period and switch. Like, we can't really have a high quality research study in terms of the gold standard, which is a randomized double blind control trial. If you have had any research education, you know what I'm talking about. But if you don't, that is where you have two groups. One is the control group. Three groups. One is typically the control group. And then you have the groups do a washout period after having the intervention that you're putting through. And they don't know which intervention they're getting. That's what makes it double blind. And you don't know what intervention they're getting. And then you have them switch. That just cannot be for a lot of nutrition studies because one, it's unethical. Two, especially if we think there could be a really poor outcome for a kid, like that's just never going to get approved. So it's really important to recognize that this is usually by like report, these types of studies. It's by surveys, asking people. And there are, of course, limitations with that because, I mean, if you have kids, you know, you can't control their diet. Like you could do your best, but, you know, we can't really make them do stuff for a long period of time. Especially, you know, with the idea that, hey, this could give your kid an issue. So yes, there have been associations and avoiding dyes. If you have ADHD or a kid with ADHD, maybe an intervention you could try to see if it helps, but there's no promises because correlation does not equal causation. Some food dyes may cause allergic reactions in sensitive individuals. This has also been found in research. It's not super common. There's a lot other like food allergies or like environmental allergies that are a lot more common than a food dye allergic reaction. This personally, just like clinically in my experience, is not something that I see very often at all. And I'll tell you why in a second, but that is definitely something that people like to bring up. Oh, I have an allergic reaction when I eat Red 40, you know, I get hives or I get a stomach ache or I have these symptoms and I can identify that it is coming from this specific artificial dye. And some people, they can have this reaction to a couple of the artificial dyes, but not all of them. And for some people it is more of them, but again, it's something you kind of need to play around with if you've got some random food allergy symptoms, but it's pretty unlikely that it would be coming from a small amount of artificial dyes that are safely put into the food system after rigorous studies. another finding that's kind of interesting and kind of goes into the category of we really need more research on this entire subject, but pretty cool is that what's been found in like one or two studies is that when gut bacteria metabolize artificial dyes, some compounds produced could possibly be linked to poor health outcomes. But this is really complex and not super well studied. What we know about a lot of gut microbiome research is that they're done in vitro or in rats, and we can't really extrapolate that to humans. And basically what I tell people about the gut microbiome and gut bacteria is that it's really like, you know, outer space. Like we know a lot about it, but we really don't know everything. Like it's really too big and vast that we will never know everything. So we need more research here, but I do think it's super interesting to kind of look at different strains of bacteria, give them different dyes and see what happens, because that could be what happens in our gut microbiome if we have those strains of bacteria and we consume those dyes. But again, we can't really compare. So really, most of the meta-analyses that are out there on artificial dyes show that there's no sufficient evidence that artificial food dyes cause cancer or that they are unsafe. It should, you know, really be emphasized, though, that most of these studies are animal studies and they have either weak or disproven associations in terms of the studies that show that they do cause cancer. So let's get into some of the study limitations now, because I think this is important. People can throw around research all day long, but it's really important to talk about the context of the research, the strength of the study design, and basically just ask more questions. Like whenever we do research, we should probably leave with more questions than we came with. That's what I was taught when I was going through school and doing research. And I know it's what a lot of PhDs find too. They're like, I know everything now and I know absolutely nothing. So in terms of study limitations, most of the research on artificial dyes typically look at dyes in isolation. So a lot of them will look at giving rats red 40 or asking, you know, parents if they're like how often their kids have had, you know, yellow six. They are not looking at the combination of food dyes, which is typically what's found in a lot of products to create a certain color. Because like I said, artificial food dyes are typically primary colors. And that's so that we can combine them to make like green or purple or like different colors. So, you know, it's hard to control for that when we're talking about individual dyes. Most of the research studies were done on animals like rats and not humans. So we cannot, you are not a rat. So we cannot really extrapolate that perfectly. I think there's a reason it's done on animals because it might be unethical. It might cause poor outcomes and it would be better to do that on a rat than a child. But I know a lot of animal advocates also would not be thrilled that it's done on animals at all. So I totally see you if that is your opinion. A lot of the studies are short term, you know, they're kind of over the course of 2 years or less, typically much less than that. So it's hard to really identify, you know, if there are long term effects of this. We don't know. We don't have a lot of research on that. And if we did, it would probably be like a cohort or like survey result type study, which may not be the strongest, you know, research design method, but that's what you typically have to do for longer term interventions, especially if they might be a little unethical. And a lot of these studies incorporate much, much, much higher doses of artificial dyes than what's realistically found and proven to be safe, or I'm sorry, at least associated to be safe in food. So, you know, we could say that particular dyes may cause ADHD symptoms all day long, but that might be if we're mega dosing it in unrealistic amounts all day, every day. And that's probably not going to be the case with a lot of people and their diets realistically. So when it comes to, you know, key takeaways and recommendations, this is what we got. Like, this is the research that we have. This is everything I'm sharing. Like, I'm not gatekeeping anything. So kind of what I say is that based on current evidence, artificial dyes have been found to be safe in the amounts that are present in food. And there's been a lot of testing to ensure that this is the case. It's not just willy-nilly. We can't point fingers at other countries and say we're doing something wrong if they're going through similar processes and having different outcomes and also allowing other things in their food system that we do not. So, you know, I think if it really stresses you out, it's fine to have artificial dyes. especially since artificial food dyes are most often found in your processed foods. If you're eating a balanced diet, if you're taking into account nutrition recommendations that I and so many other very qualified sports dietitians out there who I respect recommend, then you're probably getting a very low amount of artificial dyes in your life. And again, hyperfixating on any ingredient or any food is unhealthy and going to cause you more stress than it's worth. And that stress is going to be worse for you than the dye probably is in that small, tiny amount. Okay. So if having a handful of Sour Patch Kids on a run once a week really freaks you out because you're afraid of the artificial dyes that are in the Sour Patch Kids, then we might have another problem to address, which is your relationship with food. If that's something that really stresses you out. Now, if you're consuming a diet that is, you know, more than 80% really highly processed, contains a lot of artificial ingredients, you're doing a lot of like, you know, artificial protein powders, regular, you know, like soda or, you know, like the Gatorade that you could buy at the store, and you are eating candy every day, and you know, you're not meeting the fruit and vegetable, grain, protein, dairy, if you do dairy, et cetera, recommendations to help you meet your micronutrient and nutrition needs. Yeah, then like we do need to clean that up a little bit and we need your diet to be a bit more balanced. And that's not because the artificial dyes are bad for you and going to cause you to go down a rabbit hole, but it's probably just because you're lacking in the nutrition department. Like we're, you know, we're displacing nutrients by incorporating some of those other foods if it is in excess. A lot of the people who listen to this podcast, a lot of the people who I work with, that's reflected in this population, don't really necessarily have that problem. In my experience, you guys tend to not eat enough. Your default tends to be inadequate in terms of how much you think you need to eat versus how much you actually need to eat. And you're a little bit more concerned about your health and your food than the average Joe. So you're probably not really consuming all that many artificial dyes to begin with and don't really need to worry about this. The strongest evidence is the link between artificial dye consumption and the hyperactivity or ADHD in children. So this is definitely the strongest association. But again, results are inconsistent, inconclusive, and there do appear to be other factors that could also be contributing to hyperactivity and ADHD. There's a genetic component, and it's really going to vary in sensitivity among children. So if you have a kid that struggles with this, or if you're extra concerned about this, you can try to limit your dye consumption. You know, it is really dose dependent. So, you know, again, I wouldn't stress a ton if they have, you know, candy every once in a while, or they have soda, or they have something that has artificial dyes in it. But I would maybe not make it an everyday thing if you're extra concerned about this because you are at more risk or they are at more risk. So overall, artificial dyes pose little to no health risk to the overall population when consumed in moderation, okay? So again, whenever people want to point at a food and say, oh my God, that food is so unhealthy, I can't believe you're eating that. Look at all the artificial ingredients in it, including dyes, that's going to cause ADHD and there's fear-mongering. You can kind of come back to, okay, well, if I was eating that food all day, every day, all the time, or foods like it, sure, that could be a concern. But also, like, what else would be a concern if that was the case? I wouldn't be meeting my nutrition needs, wouldn't be meeting my vitamin and mineral needs. I probably wouldn't feel that great. So, like, you know, again, it's never just one thing when we're talking about food. Food affects all of our body systems. Ingredients don't just cause one particular thing necessarily for most people. So we want to think of it as, what's our overall load like? Do we eat enough? Do we have such intense fear over certain ingredients and food relationship issues that that stress that that causes is probably a lot worse for us than the tiny side effect that eating a bunch of artificial dyes may cause if we do it every single day all the time. And maybe we should really address our relationship with food instead. That would probably be a better use of our energy than spending a lot of time scouring ingredients lists and being really stressed out about what food we're eating. So those are the takeaways. So hopefully this was helpful. Feel free to share this with, you know, a friend, a family member, if you found this interesting or helpful, or if other people have questions about basically just what the status is for our research on artificial dyes. I am a registered dietitian. I have not been paid by like any type of big food company in any way to put this out. I think that's like a big misconception. Have no checks from the FDA or the USDA or anything like that. This is just what I scoured and my team scoured through our research, and how we interpreted the data and apply it to giving general educational guidelines and to my clients who I work with as well. So hopefully this is helpful. Please share it. If you haven't rated and reviewed the podcast already and you would like to do so, I would really appreciate a 5-star rating review if you think I am worthy of that on your podcast player of choice. And until next time, happy running and happy fueling.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.